Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome Larry Ludwig to the show. Now, Larry has had a very long, very successful business and entrepreneurial career. He is always at the forefront of technology, digital marketing, and online business. And it all started when he went to work for the ad agency Poppy Tyson in 1994. He helped create some of the first websites for the likes of J.P. Morgan Chase, Lens Crafters, Minolta, T. Rowe Price, IBM, and ING Bank. I never can remember if that's Ing Bank or ING Bank, but there you have it. In 1998, he went on to work for the successful startup Commerce One, where he helped integrate a business-to-business solution for companies that included Eastman Chemical and Schlumberger. And then later in 2001, he ventured off on his own and created Empowering Media, a successful design, development, and web hosting service. He's talking my language. I'm a nerd, too. He helped build the technology infrastructure to host highly trafficked websites such as Comedy Central, GM, Thought Catalog, and Nielsen. Then in December 2009, Larry created the website Investor Junkie. We've all heard of it, to help satisfy his own needs and the needs of others to find unbiased investment content. I bet that was tricky. I'm going to ask you about that one. So sure. From scratch, he created the leading investing review and comparison site, generating review only from affiliate marketing. So then he successfully sold Investor Junkie in 2018 for $6 million. And today, his current passion is helping other business owners leverage technology and digital marketing. Larry, you have no idea how excited I am to talk to you. I am such a nerd, and you are right in my wheelhouse. So welcome to
Thank you for having me, Denise.
Success Radio. Oh, it's my pleasure. Listen, before we get started, is there anything that you wanted to tell people about you that I might have missed?
No, I mean, that's a good summary. I mean, I've always had a fascination with technology, but I think more importantly, using technology to be effective than just technology's sake. I think, you know, my background being from computer science, I think a lot of people get caught up in the coolness factor or the wowness factor or the, you know, this is the new shiny object, if you will. And I guess I've realized from a really young age that it's not just the technology itself, but how effective you use it. And I think that's really what I've been trying to implement, not only myself personally, but also in the businesses I've created.
Exactly, and I agree with you. I mean, I have watched marketers are the worst for shiny object syndrome. Like, oh,
yes.
Okay, I saw this, you know, and they'll go to me or you, their web developers or their, you know, whoever it is that's handling everything. I'm an agency, we handle everything, but I am often find myself in the position of talking them down from the ledge. Look, You haven't given what you're doing a chance. Stop this. I bet you've got the same stories.
Yeah, I mean, even personal level, I was one point, this is in the 90s, this is before really, stuff like iPhones existed. Apple had a product called Newton, and I was thinking that was going to be possibly a next wave, but it was really about 10 years plus early, too early. And just realized how ineffective and how useless it really was of a device at the time. And, you know, eventually Apple did get it right, but it took, again, over 10 years before they implemented it again. But that, at the time, was just not effective technology. I initially thought it was going to go somewhere, but it didn't.
So what did you do? I mean, did you try to employ it and then find out it was too early? Because, you know, we've all done that.
Yeah, I was trying to looking to develop applications for it and realized there was some future in it, but it just was not effective, not only in the handwriting recognition. There was an early Simpsons episode that actually showed joked on how ineffective it was, where you'd write something, it would completely turn that handwriting into something completely different, and it would have no relation to what you wrote. I mean, obviously, today we have much better with hand recognition, voice recognition, what have you, but back then it was just ineffective. It was too early.
It's interesting that you mentioned The Simpsons. I have actually never seen an entire episode. I don't watch TV. I get bored very easily. I'd rather have a book. But people are noting now that The Simpsons have been pretty on point for an awful lot of things, and it catches, you know, I wonder, what the heck do they know that we don't know? But, you know, writers are very inventive people, and a lot of times they just make up stuff, and it comes to pass. So I guess there's that.
It is, it is pretty scary how accurate they've, as of late, been with their predictions.
Yeah, I catch myself saying, okay, who are they? Who are they tapped into? What do they know?
Yes, what do they know? Tell us now.
Yeah, if you're going to go into, you know, straight conspiracy theory, let's talk about The Simpsons. But anyway, okay, so you're here to share several things: the differences in personal branding versus corporate brands and branding, and I really want to know how you started Investor Junkie and how you sold it. And then how branding affects channels, all of the channels. Channels, I can't even talk today. So let's get started. You just start talking, and I'll, you know, pop in whenever I have a question, if you don't mind.
Sure. Sure. So I created Investor Junkie, like you said, in December 2009. And, you know, from the outset, I knew that I wanted to create something that was more than just me. I mean, many other bloggers, especially in the personal finance space, it seems like, were creating blogs that were revolving around themselves. You know, they were the identity, they were the main guru or expert, what have you, and wanting to discuss that, you know, very topics or if anything, out of their own personal interest, trying to get out of debt, let's say. But I just from my end realized that it has its limits. Meaning if I was looking to sell it, if I was looking to really grow it to more than just me, it's only so far you can go as a personal brand, at least at that time. And I thought it was just didn't make sense to, you know, make it about me. It was really about the audience and build a brand into itself. So I created Investor Junkie for that purpose, that I wanted to have something that was a place that, while I may be one of the people speaking on the site, it wasn't only just me.
Okay, so you brought in other experts, and you didn't try to just hog all the limelight yourself.
Yeah, it was, if anything, and that on one hand, that was the positive side of it, because it was very easy, for example, when I did sell, to exit. But in the same notion, I didn't have any real identity, because if I was such more in the background than, you know, compared to other sites, that the individual was the person front and center. Like, in other words, if you did video, or if you do a podcast, if you do email, all those mediums are very personable, and it's, you have to have someone, some voice speaking, you know, be a figurehead, you know, speaking, you know, figurehead in front of a camera or on a podcast like we hear now here. You need someone speaking to, you know, to the audience. You can't have just some anonymous person speaking. It doesn't work in those mediums. Where the web, at least for blog posts, it's much easier to have, not anonymous necessarily, but it's people more care about the content. They're looking for, when they're searching for, you know, certain contents, they're looking for a solution. As long as it's a reputable site and it's highly regarded, they're not going to care who's the source. Where, you know, listening to a podcast, they have to, you know, they hear your voice, they relate to you. It's much more a personable medium compared to a blog post. So those are the things that I was wrestling with Investor Junkie. And actually, closer to the sale, was trying to get more into possibly adding myself into certain things like a podcast, like videos, before I did sell.
Did you manage that? Because that was in, what was it, 2018, which these days, I mean, that's almost like the ice ages, the way things go
and,
so quickly.
Yeah. And internet dog years, it's long, you know, since I've been around for now, 25 years doing web development, web design, you know, being in the internet in some way, shape, or form, it's amazing how not only how certain things become full circle again, but also, like you said, in terms of internet dog years, you know, 2 years is a long time, and the marketplace can change dramatically in just a short period. So definitely
one
of the things that, Yeah,
the things that I learned when I got my computer science degree, which is nowhere near as cool as yours is, by the way. Yeah, I thought, man, I've got this. I can do this. And about a year later, I went, oh, geez. And then, you know, I was building HTML websites. I'm sure you were as well.
Yep.
And then here comes WordPress. Like, ooh, and I got all excited. I love, love, love WordPress. But there's the things that I'm noticing this now that we have this big pandemic, global pandemic going on. The things, people seem to be going back to a simpler way to communicate.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that as well? Instead of trying to, you know, bells, whistles, shiny, look at me, look at me, look at me, they're writing almost as if you would to Homer Simpson. Here we go again. And I tell this to people all the time, write to Homer Simpson. You don't need big words right now. You need to get the message across.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, on one hand, we have technology nowadays that even just, 10 years ago would be much more difficult than it is today in terms of, having commerce exist, such as things as like Zoom, Skype. I mean, some of those technologies existed, but in the way we have much more bandwidth, much more technology to do things like video streaming as if it's a commonplace. I mean, my kids are currently, at home taking daily lessons through Google Classroom. And again, that didn't exist 10 years ago. So those type of things allow us to be much more even connected. Obviously, it's all high tech, but in terms of messaging is concerned, I mean, to your point is, I think the fluff is kind of disappearing, which is good. I mean, one of the things that's interesting in the personal finance arena is called FIRE movement. It's called the financially independent retire early. And I was never really a big proponent of it, but it was really based on some unrealistic expectations of, in terms of market returns, in terms of, the amount of money needed saving, and needed to be saved. And I think in the end, it's because of the issues we're having economically in the stock market and the economy. I think it's kind of gone out the window. That I think people realize you need much more than, say, less than $1 million. You can't live on that, from 30 on. It's not just technically feasible. I think those type of things have kind of gone away, which is a net good thing. So I think, yes, we'll have definitely much turmoil in this current economy, but I think in the long run, we'll all be better off from it in terms of learning what was fake and what was reality. I think that's a big part of it.
I agree with you, and this is a great time to innovate. I mean, people are like, geez, Denise, really? I mean, you're trying to make light of this? I am not. But innovation often comes from great turmoil. Look at the world history.
Exactly. Apple, was during the turmoil of the 70s. You have, Disney. I studied or read quite a bit of biography a few years ago about Walt Disney and the issues they had to deal with during the Great Depression. Or even during World War II, where they just were really struggling. It wasn't, it wasn't easy times for these businesses, but they figured out ways to thrive. And it's, different nowadays, as you've got to be resourceful as an entrepreneur.
You really do. And I find myself, my brain is really on fire now because, I mean, there is no way any of us could have anticipated this, I don't think.
No.
But now I'm reading and watching and, just quietly lurking, and I'm seeing people come up with some terrific ideas, and they're not just going to sit, in isolation and go, oh, my God, we're going to run out of rice and beans. They're doing things. They're completely pivoting. They're changing how they maybe have done business before. They understand that they're going to have to go into other directions, which leads me to my questions about technology, because we've been talking about it a bit, but what do you see or what are you anticipating that people will be doing who, are now working from home and kind of like it? They don't want to go back into, spending 2 hours on the freeway in L.A. and paying for, dry cleaning and, getting themselves in crowded elevator. I mean, I'm flinching just thinking about all three of those things. Like, oh, God.
I mean, things
are going to change.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's scary, and I wrote this article in December on my blog. If on LarryLedwood.com. So I wrote an article, 8 Blogging Business Trends for the Next 10 Years. And believe it or not, on Investor Junkie in 2009, it was one of my first posts, I wrote an article called It's 2010, Where's the Monolith? In reference to 2001, the Space Odyssey, the movie and the book, and where we were going to have all these great things, and some of those things didn't happen or didn't exist. And I guess one of the things that – so I wrote an article, and a lot of those things – I planned out for myself personally and looked over, looked at the next 10 years and what would happen. And it's pretty amazing how many things did actually happen in my life. So with that said, I wrote a new article in December for the same thing to really just reflect on what's happened in the past and what's the future trends. And one of the trends that I wrote, one of the trends would be much more about the education bubble we're currently in. I think we're becoming much more aware of how we don't necessarily need to be in a traditional classroom setting where we can literally, be educated anywhere and not even through necessarily traditional means as well. What I mean by that is it doesn't have to be through necessarily a classroom, through a school. It could be, through courses. I mean, that's one of the things that I think is one of the great opportunities for entrepreneurs, is really helping others, either in business or otherwise, educate them on various topics and do it much more effective, much more cheaper than currently we have out there.
Listen, I agree with you. I was speaking with my sister yesterday, who's on the board of the school board in her town, and you know, as much as they don't like it, they're seeing that, you know, traditional classrooms may not be the answer going forward.
No.
And look, you know, I firmly believe in self-education. I really do. I'm constantly investing in self-education, and I learn far more from other people who have done things like you've done. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I've invested with Tony Robbins. You know, that wasn't
mm-hmm.
cheap, but, you know, you have
no.
to do what you have to do. And I'm telling you, I spend a good part of my day educating myself. I mean, I'm working like crazy all the time. But at night when I go to bed with my iPad, I am reading, learning, listening, taking courses. You know, that's my thinking time. That's when I'm like, okay, that great idea. Let me go and, you know, let me implement that. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that in many, many ways we're going to be almost tied to our chairs or our devices learning rather than driving to go sit in a classroom. So,
well,
and I kind of like
effective.
That idea.
Yeah.
I'm an introvert.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, as bloggers, you know, I have many friends in this space as well, both in personal finance bloggers and otherwise. And it's kind of weird that as far as we've been doing this for, you know, in my case, 10 plus years. So it's not anything, meaning you literally can work from anywhere and you can be self-isolated, not necessarily because you want to, because of just, you know, now we kind of have to in some cases, but it's more importantly, you can work anywhere. You don't have location. You're location independent, which is great. I mean, as far as an
right.
entrepreneur or as far as freedom is concerned, you know, no better business opportunity is doing stuff online. So obviously, the people that, you know, have to do traditional businesses where you have to be face to face, I think that's going to change in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Well, and the speakers. I mean, I know a lot of speakers. I interview a lot of them. And they're trying to figure out now how they're going to be on stage, how they're going to get their message
mm-hmm.
out. And I don't have any answers for them yet. Do you? Do you have any ideas?
I mean, obviously, with the advent of, you know, things like Zoom, with, you know, various webinar systems, you can do it virtually. I mean, I was supposed to be at a conference, not this week, but next week in San Diego. Obviously, that's canceled. But the whole point is you can do these things virtually. I think the whole idea of virtual conferences is going to be taken off. That's something that's sort of been out there, but it's not really been that popular. I think with the issues we're having currently, I think it's going to be more popular than ever. That's not to say these trends will always happen. Face-to-face communication, without question, is always – you add things, just nonverbal cues that just don't exist.
Right.
Video conferencing, you miss certain things. You miss certain subtle cues, which can make a huge difference in interpretation of what people say. So with that said, it's by all means, doing stuff online is far from perfect, but it is certainly better than what we, you know, better than what we had maybe 10 years ago in terms of the options. You have more options now, which is great. So you can literally find the best of the best in terms of certain topics or courses and take them online and get that expertise, you know, in your doorstep, right at your home, where you don't have to leave. You don't have to go fly out to San Diego to do that conference anymore. It's more optional.
Exactly. And, you know, think of TED Talks. I mean, some of my favorite – and I do not watch TV. I cut off cable years ago. Video bores the heck out of me as a rule. Give me a book. Give me a stack of books. I'm just as happy as a pig on ice. But TEDx, I love those things. One of my favorites mm-hmm. is Amy Cuddy, you know, the I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but I think
no.
she's in the top three still. I'll send you a link to it, Amy Cuddy. She's talking about your posture and, you know, basically what you just said, how you just kind of stand up, take a deep breath, and continue to go. And it's
mm-hmm.
a wonderful – I will send you a link. But I think maybe a combination of both, you know, get out in the world, get out on stage, you know, get out into conferences, get out and, you know, don't stop doing these things – but also really kind of bolster up your business and your communication with webinars and with, you know, podcasts and just other ways to do it. There's no reason not to.
Well, one of the things that I wrote in this article on my site, and you should definitely check it out, is not only the higher education bubble, but also the idea of the personal brand. I think of the idea of, you know, personal brands are definitely the future because of it's because of the communication we're having now. People are still looking for an expert to discuss on certain topics. And the funny thing is, with the technology such as deepfake. I don't know if you're aware of that technology.
No, I don't think I've heard of it, but I haven't looked into it. Tell me about it.
Okay, so deepfake allows you to take, and there's some videos out there, and an audio for that matter, of taking, you know, certain celebrity, certain public figure, and making them say things they actually didn't say. And you would not,
oh.
It's very hard to tell even they did say it, be it video or audio. There's the two examples
yeah,
I have, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of videos. They scared me to death.
But
I mean, they really did.
But they could be used for good in the sense of you can have, there's an example I put on my blog post of Joe Rogan, the podcaster, where he is speaking. It's not him speaking, and you could not tell the difference. So the beauty of this is you can do things with video and audio of a personal brand of you saying things that, I mean, obviously you can hire someone to do these things for you, but it's much more scalable. So you can have someone, you know, write out be like no different than a ghostwriter, having something spoken on an audio podcast where it's in fact not really you. It's you, your identity, your brand, but it's still not you speaking it. It's some computer that's actually speaking for you. So I see that as something that's going to become more prevalent in the next 5 to 10 years. So it makes it much more about your brand identity, and it makes it much easier to scale. You can be at many places at the same time. So you don't have to worry about, this is the biggest issue that we've had with personal brands, going back to full circle on personal brands and the topic for today. It's much more scalable than ever because you can create these, I don't know if you ever watched the 80s TV show Max Headroom, where you can create the idea of a virtual person online where, again, it's not you really speaking, it's your identity, it looks like you, but it's in fact a computer doing it.
I've heard of Max Headroom, but I've never actually seen that. I did realize, though, I was watching a Christmas movie, and I kept looking at this guy, and I went, oh, that's who that is. Okay.
Yes.
It was fascinating. I finally recognized his jawline.
Matt Feuer, I think, is the actor's name.
Yeah.
But he was a person. At the time in the 80s, people thought that was really a computer where, obviously the technology didn't exist then. Nowadays, we could do just exactly what was done on that show. So it's pretty, sci-fi always, what turns from fact or fiction to reality is pretty amazing. And in some cases, that time frame is getting shorter and shorter. I mean, years ago,
exactly.
The idea of Dick Tracy, having a watch that you'd be able to speak into was just science fiction. It was not reality. But yet nowadays we have Apple phones, or Apple watches, I should say, that you can do that exact thing. So it's pretty amazing.
Get smart. Remember him talking to his
yes.
shoe?
Yeah,
that I have seen. But, back to Max Headroom, I've seen enough. I never actually watched. It's weird. My brain just segments things. I'll see a portion of something and file it away and know what it was and who it was, but didn't actually watch much or any of it. It's strange how it works. But, yeah, if you talk about Star Trek and,
mm-hmm.
What is it? The movies, God, what was his name? What is
Star
the movie
Wars?
With the Wookiees? Star Wars. Yeah.
Star Wars.
I knew I'd get there eventually. I really am not a fan of sitting and watching anything. But, so many of those things, you're like, oh, okay, here they are. So, again, what did they know? Or did these become, somebody said, oh, that's a great idea. Let me go make that. Who knows? I guess we could find
that's
out.
That's the thing. I mean, we just had, and I wrote this in my article as well. We just passed November 2019 was the period in the movie Blade Runner where we were supposed to have replicants and flying cars. Obviously, we don't have either. So, what science fiction sometimes has doesn't necessarily turn out to be reality, and it's hard to predict the future. There's so many variables involved with the future, but what you can do, at least the way I always look at stuff, is trends. You can see where things are going. Things like the current, epidemic we're having, you can see certain trends just happening. It just changes the overall mindset of the general public, the zeitgeist of the people, and what, people are wanting to do or not do. It just changes. In some cases, it can be literally overnight. And, but in general, you can see trends where, okay, we're going to have, I think, the education bubble is pretty obvious in retrospect, especially what's happening now. And I think way we still need to be educated. We still have issues with people not having the right skill sets for what's happening in society. So therefore, there is a skills gap. But I think it's going to be solved much more than just purely traditional education ways. It's going to be done through other fellow entrepreneurs creating courses. If you're seeing really a growth of courses like you can't believe online. So I see that growing without question. But it's changing. It's upsetting what's currently happening. It's no different than what happened during the 2000s with the iPhone and the as far as music and iTunes. Steve Jobs and Apple changed the way people listen to music. Instead of buying an album, which was considered the sacred way of listening to something, listening to a music, they decided to break it up per song, and that was just revolutionary at the time. Simple things like that can literally change the way you consume something. So keep that in mind.
Right. And before that was the MP3.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a...
With Napster.
I opened my email one day and I got this, I have a form on one of my websites that says, be my guest. And I got this cute little note from a man that said, my name is Nathan Schulhoff and I'm the creator of the MP3. I'm the father of the MP3. And I went, no, you're not. Come on. I went and looked and he was. he's been my guest a couple of times. He's a delightful man. He really is.
And it's simple little things like that. I mean, it's no different than, when the web, World Wide Web was developed, as far as the whole idea of the HTTP protocol and how that was functioning. That, literally changed the way before that, it was really super nerdy. You had things like UUnet groups and you had, ways to communicate, but it was not easy as what we have now. So, thanks for, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but thanks to him, we have the ability to, use the web and use it as an effective medium, not only for just personal, but for business, for commerce. And it's just totally revolutionized
exactly.
The way we do stuff online. It's pretty amazing.
Exactly. And graphical user interface. We couldn't put up pictures on the internet before we had that. And people are going, what are you talking about? GUI, graphical user interface. But
yep.
There went my nerd side. Sorry about that. So we're talking about some really in-depth thing, but I want to go back to the blog article. What else is on? And I will go, take a long look at it. But what else is on there that you think is pertinent right now today, with what we're going through?
I mean, I guess the biggest issue I think we have is we were in literally a 11-year bull market in terms of the stock market, in terms of the economy. We didn't have any recession or correction. Obviously, in light of what's happening now, we're in a massive bear market correction. So with that said, it was way overdue. And on top of the valuations, we were priced to perfection, meaning we were really at the peak of the market. So, this correction, if you follow certain economics, I'm not going to get into the details, but if you follow certain ways economically, you need kind of a correction. Having all boom and no bust is just not reality. And you need to have it kills all the deadwood and as far as the bad investments. Things like WeWork is a great example of that. I've railed on them and how bad and how stupid of an idea it was.
Yeah.
But yet,
they're in the trash right now, poor thing.
Exactly. They may not even
exist
because
shape.
Of – Yeah, I mean, they're a highly leveraged company on top of, it was for small businesses, small entrepreneurs, for shared space, no less, that in a pandemic, no one's going to want to be at. And it's interesting how I have a friend who does have a WeWork facility or uses a WeWork facility in San Diego, yet – just only like a week or two ago, they're looking to increase his rent, which I just don't see how that's possible. Yeah.
That's desperation. That stinks all over the place.
I mean,
why would
things
you
like WeWork,
do
yeah,
that?
It's going to change, yeah. I mean, you're not going to need shared office space. I mean, more people will be working from home. If for bloggers like myself, that's not anything new. I mean, I have an office space too. It's just more separation. You do need to kind of get out of the house and separate your personal life from your business life because of, unfortunately, and I've known this too much from working from home myself, it just becomes a blur because there's no segmentation of, okay, I'm going to work from these time frames, I'm going to take the rest of the day off after this time frame and focus on personal things. And it becomes a blur, and that's not necessarily a good thing either when working from home.
It does, and I've had the same problem because, I do live alone. I'm a highly committed introvert. And I've, honestly, and I've said this, I'm joking because I love my car, but I've often said if I could get somebody to deliver 20 pounds of live fresh crawfish and a head of cabbage to my front door, I'd sell my car. I drive a Range Rover. I'm not selling it. I love her.
Yeah.
But listen, I've had exactly the same issues. I've had to be very, very committed to saying, okay, Denise, you can work for just long. Yep, focus is so important now and always, but I have to focus, and I will tell myself when I sit down at my keyboard, you're going to spend 30 minutes, 40 minutes, because after that you're blind. You're not. You're just reading the same words over and over.
Yep.
But I will focus and say, okay, I'm going to take this particular task and nothing else. I'm not looking at email. I'm not looking at Facebook. Everything is shut down. I'm focusing strictly on this piece of, let's say it's a website that I'm building. Then I get up. I go take a, you know, what I call open refrigerator door syndrome meditation. I stick my head in the refrigerator door and go completely blank every time. We all do it.
Yeah, you need to break up the day. I mean, there's times obviously you need to focus and you need to make sure.
Focus.
I mean, we have on one hand, we have issues like, you know, with shared office spaces especially. It's just distractions, you know, other people either asking you questions or just overall noise, you know, pollution. But yet, the same notion, too, you can isolate yourself so much to be so focused and sit at a computer all day, that's also not healthy. So you have to manage more of your time and manage more when you want to do certain things. Like, say, I'm from this time to this time, I'm going to do X project or X work. From this time to this time, I'm going to get out and go work out or go out of the house or go somewhere to do something else or even change the environment from time to time, like work at a Starbucks or some other location. So not always being in the same – sometimes just changing it up in the environment – it's something needed. So where, you know, working from home, definitely, if someone has not been doing this, it's definitely a huge culture shock from now working from home or being forced to, you have no choice, and dealing with, you know, having children at home, having, you know, dog barking in the background, having all these different distractions that can definitely make it hard to concentrate. I get that.
Yeah, it can. And I'm reading stories from a lot of people who just, they've never done this. And, you know, they may be social creatures. I'm not. I never have been, but I'm fine with that, but they're dealing with exactly what you just talked about. Mom, I'm hungry. Mom, come wipe my butt.
Yep,
you know,
yes.
I saw a video, of, not a video, but a picture of a girl, you know, with this funny look on her face, and behind her, her little boy was in his Spider-Man costume whispering, can you hear me breathe? Which I thought was funny. She
the funny thing is,
I thought it was cute.
Yeah. The funny thing is, what was it, like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that the BBC had a guest on, was, you know, doing from his house, and the kid ran and, you know, came from the background into the actual live recording, you know, on the BBC, where we're going to have, I haven't seen that yet on live TV. We're having all these guests on TV shows, you know, on live TV shows, but I've not seen one kid walking up behind, you know, the parent on some, you know, like on CNN, for example. I haven't seen that yet. I'm waiting for that to happen. And obviously it's going
to
be funny.
Happen.
It's going to happen. It's no question. But so far I haven't seen that yet, which is kind of funny because if you think it would have happened more often because of these, you know, it obviously puts more of a personalization in the person and, you know, realize that people are people and we're obviously dealing with some trying issues. In the same notion, it is funny that, you know, kids will be kids and they'll do stuff like that. So
that's exactly right. And here's another thing that maybe people aren't thinking about. I mean, this is also a great opportunity, even if your children are very young, to teach them about focus, you know, because kids are sponges. They watch what you're doing. They watch how you're behaving. You know, and if you're telling your child, okay, Mikey, I need exactly 30 minutes. I'm putting myself in timeout, so can you do whatever it is that you're doing, coloring, not on the walls, you know, just whatever task that – I don't have children, so, you know, now you know. But you know, just they can watch you – focus. They can watch you work. They can watch you say, okay, I'm standing up from my desk now. I'm shaking it off. Let's go out and pet the dog. There's so many opportunities to be with your family, to be with your children, and not go, oh, my God, oh, my God. Oh, you know, I just heard my child just bit the dog's tail. Oh, crap. You know, I mean, these things are going to happen.
That does happen.
You're right. It's personable.
Yeah, it does totally does happen. So I mean, if anything, the interesting thing was you wanted to make sure you were in an environment where you're not people would be afraid of working from home and hearing the dog bark in the background. Where now it's, you know, it's much more going to be accepted, which is good. It puts more personalization in yourself. Going back to personal branding, it makes you more real, more human. That you don't have to, you know, like, I think most people get the fear of like doing video or podcasting. Everything has to be perfect, professional. You know, to the I's dotted, the T's crossed, and making sure there's no mistakes or issues along the way. But that's not reality. It's reality. People want to see more of the flaws, the human character flaws, or the issues that you deal with on a day-to-day basis. They want to see you, you know, as a person, not as some robot, because it's just not reality.
And these days, when we have to innovate very, very quickly, if you're going to paralyze yourself with analysis and, oh my God, I can't do that, wasn't perfect, you're going to be left way behind. So just get it out there. You know, the thing about the internet now and how we operate now is we can correct. You know, you don't put up an old HTML site and then have to call your web developer and wait 4 weeks for them to fix that, you know, incorrect sentence or add a period to a sentence. It just doesn't operate that way. We can pivot very, very quickly.
Well, you want to, I mean, that's always been
getting
my,
it out there, though.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's always been my take as well, as far as web design, web development, user experience. Just overall, my philosophy in business is trying to improve 1% a day in my business, because of the effects of that are dramatic over a year, where people, I think, underestimate what they can do in a year and not realize what can be possible in 10. So in general, you should be looking towards improving yourself or improving your business at 1% at some level, making some specific goal for today and saying, I'm going to try to do X, Y, and Z, but not also be perfect either, because that's not reality. Is you're just looking to constantly improve, going, you know, referencing Tony Robbins, you know, his whole can I principle applies, where it's just constantly and never ending improvement. You need to constantly improve yourself, and business is the same way.
And track it. You know, don't just say, okay, I'm going to do this or try to do this. At the end of the day, write it down. Did you actually manage it? What happened? What stopped you? Because that's important. That's data. You know, all operate on data. What's your personal data look like right now?
I mean, that's the same issue with, I mean, be it affiliate marketing that I was in or just overall e-commerce in general, is there, the tools are available now. When I first started, the tools didn't exist. They were all were discussed as pie-in-the-sky ideas, and I realized that was the technology or what was possible. But in order to implement it, you had to develop it all yourself and custom develop it in-house. Now you can develop, take free tools or even commercial tools on the cheap, and for a small business owner, you can do things that, again, used to cost literally millions of dollars to implement. You can do for a small business owner on the cheap, and even in some cases free, like Google Analytics. You know, I don't think many people use the full capability of what's possible, even Google Analytics as a free tool. But yet there's also tools better than that as well.
Well, now that we're talking about tools, because I have that written down, I wanted to ask you, what are some of the tools that you're using and that you can recommend for people who just have not really, I need to do webinars, I want to create a course. What are some of the tools that you really like and have used that you can recommend?
Well, I mean, let's start with the basics of measuring your website and just overall the other systems you have in place. You know, Google Analytics, while free, is not bad, but I don't like its limitations. Primarily, what's called PII, or personal identification information, you can't put into Google's Analytics, and really just still being, even with some changes they've implemented, still web-centric, meaning it's all web-based as far as how many page views, what you've done on the website, and, you know, where your source is from the web. But, you know, honestly, it's much more than just that. It's also other sources nowadays. You have your mailing list, you have your shopping cart system, you have push notifications, you have various ways you have to integrate all these different data points. And I think Google Analytics is really lacking as a tool, where I've been using a tool called Woopra, Woopra, for really my business, and recommended for my clients as well. It's something that just allows you to take all these different data silos from, again, email, shopping cart, website, what have you, and put it into a database where you can then generate these queries and really look at your analytics in much more detail than what Google can ever offer. Because if you can store customer data in there, where compared to, again, Google Analytics, you can't. Google will send you a little nasty gram saying, you store emails, you can't do this, you know, please remove immediately or we're going to suspend your account. Where, honestly, you want that data. You want to be able to start tracking people at an individual level, meaning Google Analytics is much more high-level aggregate, you know, showing me how many people have visited a page or done this transaction, where it might be great, but you want to be able to drill it down to, okay, this person came from these sources and visited my site 5 times before they finally converted. And Google Analytics really doesn't do that effective doing that.
No, and too many people think, you know, all they want to know is the bounce rate. That's not really the most important thing. It's important, not all that critical.
No, it's you want to, I mean, people, as far as a marketing exercise, people take multiple times before they finally convert on something, be it your own product or affiliate marketing. And the average, they say, is around 8. I think it's even higher in some cases in some industries. So you need 8 touch points or 8 interactions with your brand before they finally convert. And it's, you know, with something like Google Analytics, you have no idea how many times they've interacted with your brand. It just shows,
right,
again, anonymous blob of you have this many page views. Where a tool like Whooper, you can break it down to literally, I showed to one of my clients recently, they were fascinated. They'd never, you know, there's like literally a bell curve where the more, at a certain point, they convert, and after that, they drop off. And for our end, we decided to, at that point, that peak point, perhaps offer a pop-up before, you know, like $100 off on their service before they leave. In other words, give some sort of incentive at that peak time of interest before, and it has helped increase their conversion rate. So stuff like that, you need to measure. You know, if you're not properly measuring your data, your blog, it's really, it's not effective. You don't have no idea how well you're doing. And again, this is not just for your own products or services, but what I did in my case was unique, is for affiliate marketing as well, treating it as if we had our own products, and therefore knew, you know, this source of traffic was better than this other source. It was all about quality in the end. That, you know, social media traffic converted for this post compared to a paid traffic did this amount. You know, normally people have no idea. They just, it's all one big blob of traffic, and you just have conversions, and most people are just happier enough to just get conversions, where to me, not all traffic is created equal. You need to know which traffic is better and therefore focus on those traffics if you know they're converting better.
And I like your idea of putting, you know, watching and finding out. Just, you can almost sense, I think, when people are just like, this isn't for me. I'm going to leave and I'm probably never going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like this allows you to go, okay, I'm sensing their fatigue. What do I do? How can I help them?
Exactly. Going back to overall personal brand or even a corporate brand, you want to have, you know, people, it takes a certain amount of time before someone interacts with your brand before they convert. They usually don't convert at the first visit or first try. It just doesn't happen. So therefore, they need multiple touch points. And again, something like Google Analytics, you're having stuff over here in Google Analytics and then using ActiveCampaign, your email system, and then using ThriveCart as your shopping cart. They're all just separate systems, so there's no way to link that data up together normally where you want that data. You want to have all this stuff in one place, and Whooper allows you to do that, which is great. So it's a tool, without question, it's in my base of, you know, systems that just manage everything in one location. You know that, again, this person's came from a paid traffic from Google, that they, you know, sign up to your mailing list, that they've opened these emails, that then therefore they clicked on the shopping cart page and then finally converted. Again, it shows you in one long history where you can drill down to that specific individual, but also at the aggregate, you can know, okay, your funnel is, you know, this, this, and this. You have, you know, 100 people visit the landing page, you know, 5% of them sign up as a lead, and 1% eventually converted. So you can do both of those, where, again, Google Analytics can only do the overall aggregate.
That's some excellent. I mean, I had not heard of them, so I'm definitely going to be looking at them. And while you're talking, I was thinking back in the day, you talked about shopping cart, you talk about your email list.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when none of those spoke together before?
Nope.
I think, what is it?
Zapier?
The one shopping cart that, no, it,
oh,
well, Zapier, yes. But I'm thinking about, my brain is just dead today, but it'll come back to me at 2 o'clock this morning. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Shopify?
I remember. No, it wasn't Shopify. It was the one that everybody hates so bad. Anyway, big shopping cart. It's very complicated. It's very expensive. Darn, my brain is just, seriously, my brain is just not functioning today. But a lot of people are yelling at me, I know what it is, and they're trying to tell me, and I'm not hearing it, sorry. But
that's okay.
You know, before that came into play, there were two major shopping carts, and this is one of them. But before those came into play, we had to toggle everything, and everything had to be done manually, and half the time it didn't work. And it was frustrating as all get out. So it sounds like this really solves a big, big problem that takes all of these techniques and these tools that we're using and lands them in a spot where you can actually say, okay, this is what's going on. I need to pivot. This isn't working. Get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love the idea, so I'll definitely be checking that out. So what others, you know, what other tools do you recommend?
As far as then for conferencing, I mean, I had great success with Zoom. I just recently did a new course. Full-time blogger was the name of the course. And I released that to a small audience, and from there did it all live. So I literally Did it through Zoom and treated it like a virtual classroom where we'd have these live sessions where I, train in front of the audience and then do a live Q&A every week as well. And that worked really well. So Zoom, not necessarily being perfect, but it's definitely something that I like. And the beauty of it, again, as you tie it into a tool like Woopera, then I can tie in how many times these people have logged in. Did they actually attend the live session? And my goal, I haven't implemented it yet for my own stuff, but that's what I plan on doing since I have the ability to do it, is to say, okay, they've paid for the course, but they have yet to visit the membership area or they've yet to log into a Zoom session. And let's find out why and actually send them an email, kind of remind them that, hey, I'm here for them before they cancel. I mean, one of the things that – there's two aspects of to me that I consider critical for successful business. One is increasing your conversion rates, along the sales funnel. And the other part, after they become a customer, making sure you retain that customer. You spend all this time and effort and money to acquire this customer. It's much cheaper to keep an existing customer happy than to try to find a new one. And that's something I learned really well with my web hosting, web development business. I had a very low attrition rate. And because of that, really understood the power of keeping existing customers happy. That to me is key. And it's not necessarily a marketing exercise, and most people don't think about it, but I think with the current economic conditions, I think it's becoming more and more important because if people are going to, it's going to be harder and more costly to find new customers, either not because they're not willing to do it or they're just not willing to, switch from their existing customer company. So therefore, you want to keep your existing customer base happy as well.
Exactly. One shopping cart is one of the ones I was thinking about. The other one is there. I can't even think about that one for some reason. But one shopping cart is one of the ones. Which one?
Miva, which was something I used in a day. It was a really clunky e-commerce system for my customers, and I hated it.
Yeah, this is one that everybody signed up for. God, I am so embarrassed. I cannot remember it, and everybody knows its darn name. My brain is just like, meh, you don't need it today, apparently. But I'll think of it. But One Shopping Cart, they were big rivals at the time. I think they probably still are. But again, we had to cobble everything together, and oh my gosh, it was expensive. It was frustrating, and most of the time it just broke. So there are so many different things that people can, and I love what you're saying about Zoom. I actually have a consultation with somebody who's going to, walk me through a lot of that because I don't really know much about it yet. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous. I don't know enough to be an expert, and I want to be an expert. Is that something that you teach? Are you going to be teaching
as
that?
Far as,
Zoom,
no, I'm not looking to do, like my course right now, full-time bloggers, about the kind of what we've just discussed today is the whole optimization of the sales funnel. How 1% improvements at the various touch points in your sales funnel can make dramatic improvements. I did the example in the course of, let's say you're currently getting a payout of $100 for affiliate or otherwise, meaning your own product, where you can literally turn that to $800 and, and just dramatic increases in conversions. If you really focus on optimizing the whole sales funnel, it could be a huge, huge difference in the end without really trying to get more customers for that matter. You can literally improve your conversion process by just making these small little tweaks. I did one for one customer I just recently did. I doubled their conversion rate for their shopping cart, which is dramatic, going from, I think it was a 3% conversion to a 6% conversion. So that's huge in terms of then the amount of sales that they get now.
So where should people start? I mean, we're going to see, I believe, a big, big interest in people building things, sharing things, teaching things. And I'm telling you right now, most of them are just like, oh, I've got these terrific ideas. I have so much to share. I see it in the podcast industry. When I started podcasting 11 years ago, I was pretty much one of the lone voices out there, and I just kept, poking at it. Now, of course, everybody and their grandmother wants to be a podcast host. And look, I spend some time in some of these Facebook groups, and I'm telling you right now, I will never need a facelift. My eyebrows are permanently in my hairline. Don't do that. Don't listen to these people. They're idiots. But I hope none of them are listening to me right now. But you see these things and people are like, oh, yeah. I've been a podcaster for 5.5 minutes. I am now an expert. Ignore those people.
Yes.
Find people who know what they're doing, who have done it, can prove that they've done it. People like you, people like me, people like other experts. But the thing is, and I've got a little bit off track there, but we're going to see a huge emergence of people going, I've got things I can share, I can help people, but Mother
yes.
of God, where do I start? And I think that's, when we talked about that a bit, you know, you just go, okay, I don't even know where to start. I'll wait until tomorrow. Somebody will show me, right? So, no,
well,
start now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's interesting, I had a boss once tell me, I asked this exact same question, where I didn't know where to start. And he asked the classic term of you know, how do you eat an elephant? And it's, you know, one bite at a time. You really start with, just start and do it. You know, do something. Just don't sit on your hands and do nothing. You've got to do something. And it may not be necessarily the best thing. It may not be the right thing. But it's better than no action at all, in this case, as far
yeah,
as an
and you learn. You're
yeah.
going to learn, okay, that one didn't work for me, but now guess what? I've got that little bit of knowledge. I'm going to go find something different. You've just got to start.
You need a feedback loop. I mean, that's the same methodology I teach for, you know, ad campaigns. You need Google and Facebook love to have feedback, and it goes back to your own, you know, your own site using tools like Whooper. If you're not measuring stuff, you have no idea how effective or ineffective it is. And now with Google and Facebook ads, it's all algorithm based. So they actually look, you know, for conversions and then say, okay, based on the people you so far have converted, be it for a lead or you know, paid service, we'll look for other people like that in your audience. So therefore, it does it all automatically. I mean, that's definitely the future of you know, services like Facebook and Google. You need to make sure you have the feedback loop sent to those systems. Otherwise, you're spending all this money on ads and have no idea, or Facebook or Google doesn't have any idea what to do with it. It just doesn't know there's conversion. So you've got to make sure that happens. And again, eventually, those type of tools would become more commonplace for, you know, smaller blogs where you can do it on your own site as well. That's definitely the future.
Oh, I agree with you. So what other, you know, for people who are just, let's just say they've not done anything like this at all, and they're saying, I don't even know where to start. Larry, do you have any, you know, where can I start? I want to start a blog, or I want to start a webinar, or, you know, I'm going to tell you to go get some education. Invest. This, I know things are tight, money's tight, but I think this is one of the best times to invest in learning what you need to learn to create your business. So find that time, find that money, and focus your heart out and learn. Self-education, it's so critical at all times, now more than ever. So where else can, you know, I don't even know what they're starting. So, you know, I love the tool that you've shared. What other tools that are in your wheelhouse that you think people really, really need right now?
I mean, in the end, you need an audience. So you literally, you don't even have to have a blog nowadays. I mean, obviously, I mean, probably be preferable. I usually recommend it because if you don't own channels like social media, like Facebook, but you could just start up something on Facebook. I mean, there are tools out there that are freely available that you don't have to spend any money on. You know, again, you don't own Facebook, so therefore they could cut you off. So
right.
The goal should
be
to get them off of Facebook, yeah. But you can start at that level. I mean, I've seen people do just simple Facebook Lives, and literally it doesn't cost you anything. You can do it, you know, without any paid tools. So you can start from there. But realizing those channels, that, you know, they're owned by, you know, companies like Facebook, Google. So therefore, the goal should be at some point getting them off that channel and onto your own, something you can control, such as a blog.
And that's why you're using Zoom?
Yeah, I guess in my case, well, one is the analytics, because Facebook, you know, there's no way to know or give feedback to know if someone's watching a video and then report it to a tool like Whoopra. But the other aspect is, yeah, it's not something you own. You have no control over it. So therefore, that's also why I use Vimeo for my videos as well, as opposed to YouTube. A lot of people
use
YouTube. I was
going to ask. Yeah. Gotcha. So once you've created your Zoom, can you, you know, and I'm asking for the audience, can you then take that and move it over to Vimeo so it is yours? I mean,
yes. Well, it is yours. You can store it locally onto there's two options that Zoom has. You can store it in the cloud, so you pay for that and have a certain amount of space, so therefore you can share it that way. Or you can store it to your local hard drive, and then from there you can do what you wish with it. It's purely what's called an MP4 video. So you can upload it to YouTube, you can upload it to Vimeo or Wistia or whatever service. So you're not limited.
Right.
You can even do it to Facebook, too. You could do it on put it on Facebook as well after it's done. So that's your choice. I mean, in the end, what I'm suggesting, you should definitely own that content, save that content somewhere locally, then you have a master of it, and then distribute it through other channels if necessary, such as YouTube. But just be aware of, you know, again, since you don't own that channel, they could shut it off anytime they please.
I had that happen. My very first blog, when it was huge, I mean, I had a ton of people visiting. It's called Internet Mastery way back in the day before there was WordPress.org.
Mm-hmm.
We had to go to WordPress.com. And I was just typing along and having a good time and really getting to know a lot of people because they were reading my work. And all of a sudden, I got a notice from WordPress.com that my blog was being shut down because I had not read the fine point, you know, the fine little letters.
Yep.
And in one blog post, I had gone ahead and used an affiliate link, and
oops,
some little witch caught me. I didn't know I was doing anything bad, and turned it in, and I had to plead with them to give me time to download all my stuff. It took me days to get everything down, get it all downloaded, but they wouldn't change their mind.
Yeah.
And I learned a valuable, this is years, decades ago, and I learned never to put all my stuff on something that everybody owns, that somebody owns.
Yep.
Other than me. So I am in full agreement with you on that.
I mean, the interesting thing is, so email is definitely another way you have control over still, but you still don't necessarily, meaning this is the thing that I find interesting from other gurus out there. They'll say, you know, the money is in the mailing list. You got to have a mailing list, which I agree. You need to have a mailing list because it's definitely an effective way to communicate with your audience. But, you know, one of the things is you may have a person's email address, but if it doesn't get delivered to the person, is it read? Meaning, it's not the classic philosophical statement. If a tree falls in the woods and no one's there, it doesn't make a sound. If someone, you send an email and it doesn't get delivered, are they able to read it? And the answer is no. So therefore, and Google being the biggest purveyor or owner of email accounts, which I think 30% of all email accounts are from Gmail, Google. So therefore, you're still going through a gatekeeper like Google, but you at least have some more control over it than compared to other mediums like a Facebook channel, where, again, Facebook or Twitter, if Twitter doesn't like what you have to say or see, they could shut you down overnight. And there's no recourse. Or in the case of YouTube, they could demonetize your blog, where I've had friends, get disabled or demonetized for really no apparent reason because it's all algorithm-based. There's no person necessarily looking at your blog and going, we're going to punish them. It's all computer-based. And I had another friend recently on Facebook, no less. Their URL for their blog was banned, so they effectively no longer existed in Facebook. You could not communicate not only on their public page with that URL, but also any private pages or private chat for that matter. So you could not use this URL anywhere.
And this is happening. I have a friend who all of a sudden he got a notice from Gmail that, what he was sending to a group of us was not
mm-hmm.
acceptable.
Yep.
How the heck do they even know? And none of it was in any way a problem. I mean, this is business related. This is,
It's algorithm based. I mean,
it's crazy.
Goes back to technology. As much as I love technology, firms like Facebook and Google are all about the technology and using AI and other algorithms to automate things. The problem is their nets could be too wide and cause all sorts of problems that they, it's like there's almost no recourse or no way to get in touch with them. They'll actually talk to a person to say, hey, this is not a legitimate ban. Like, why are you banning me for this issue? And it can happen for, your social, organic social media to your paid traffic as well, where they could ban an ad because if some algorithm thinks it's wrong, and it's not, though. But so you always have to keep that in mind. That's why I'm kind of not a fan of algorithms, and I don't fear as much as others of, computers are going to take over jobs because of just things that need intellect. Human intellect is just not going to, it's not going to disappear anytime
exactly.
soon because computers make mistakes because of the people that program and develop it are just infallible. So therefore, I'm not worried for the skills that can be easily automated are going to be automated. The ones that are,
mm-hmm.
Really require human interaction and human thought are just not going to disappear anytime soon.
I agree. And we need some emotional, intelligence with that.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, it has been wonderful speaking with you, and we're just about out of time. It went so quickly. Where can people find you on the web?
So you can go to LarryLidwood.com/podcast, and I have an actual I have a free guide to affiliate marketing on there. You also can text me at Larry at 31996. That's 31996. The word Larry Podcast, all one word. And you can also get that free affiliate marketing guide as well if you enter your email address. So you get prompted that way as well.
Excellent. Larry, thank you so much. It has been wonderful speaking with you and sharing all these terrific ideas. And I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for us, Your Partner in Success Radio, and take us along on your success journey. Larry, thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.